Welcome to the Mitch Hanks Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hanks Show.
Our guest is Patrick Cadell, who was really a kid pollster going back to McGovern, and was a very young pollster for President Carter, and worked for Gary Hart, for Joe Biden, has been a Fox News contributor of late, and has written a lot of essays and critical of the media and the Democrats, his own party. Hello, Mr. Cadell.
Hello. Good morning.
Good to have you on the show, and I must say that you have been there for decades, and you've kind of, you buck any stereotype, any classification that would pigeonhole you. You've evolved. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think everyone does in life, and if you've been around as long as I've been in this business, as you said, I started as, I was 21 when I first was involved in the presidential campaign and the governing campaign. I would hope you would evolve or change, but I think I've charted my own course. Mm-hmm. It doesn't fit in today's paradigm that the whole world must be the far left or far right, or that you must be a partisan Democrat or a partisan Republican. I like to think you should be an American first, but apparently that's an antiquated view. Except for the vast majority of Americans who I think agree with me, but certainly not in the political class or the media.
Mm-hmm. How do you explain Trumpism? Because a lot of people, everybody in the mainstream media missed that. Pollsters missed it. So how do you explain it?
Well, as one who did not miss it, I wrote a piece the Monday before the election on Fox.com because I'd seen numbers that weekend. I had been tracking. I had been doing involved in a project that came to be known as the Candidate Smith Project for several years. That was really a pure research attempt to understand where the American public was and where the and from it was. It was stunning results of starting in 2013, which was that the country was reshaping the political paradigm of our time. The alienation and discontent of the American people was the unifying force for as much as 80 to 85% of the American people. Their distrust of Washington, their disdain for the two political parties, and as well as their search for real change in America. And my point was that Trump, and I said this during the election, I had a show, I was on Fox, a show called Political Insiders, with two of my colleagues, Doug Schoen and John Leboutier, And basically for several years we had argued America's in change and the political class and the media will not listen to the people. And they are going, and what happened in 2016 is all of their assumptions and their desires, worst of all, their preferred outcomes, were being upset in both parties. The vast majority of the Republican establishment was being rejected by the Republican electorate, and Trump was the vehicle for that. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders, who, as I kept saying all during 2016, he and Donald Trump are supping out of the same trough at opposite ends. So much of their whether it was on trade, on corruption, all overlapped. And that these were the driving forces, and that my piece that I wrote the day before the election was really about the November, is it going to be a November surprise? The uprising of the American people. And as I said in that piece, I now thought it was very clear that it was moving Donald Trump's way strongly because people who did not like either candidate had decided that they wanted to upset the political apple cart. And they chose to do so. And then everyone was shocked. But the one thing I've learned is nobody particularly cares in Washington, New York, in the media, or even the political class to understand how could they be so wrong. Their only desire is to restore what they view as normalcy, i.e. we are in charge and you people out there, you peons, please go away. Well, and so Trump was, let me just make this clear, Trump didn't create this. Trump was he won in spite of himself. He had many negatives, and a majority of Americans did not think the day they elected him that he was qualified to be president or had the temperament to be president. But one thing they did know and believe strongly is if Hillary Clinton won, they were going to lose, and if Donald Trump won, that the people would win over the political class. So that was the driving force at the end, and put Donald Trump, the most improbable of people, with the most improbable of victories in the White House.
Yeah, and you alluded to the disconnect between those people out in middle America in flyover country from the media elites, for even political elites. I remember, even as a kid with McGovern, my mother was for McGovern. All my family members were for McGovern. They all hated Nixon at the cocktail parties. I heard them all talking. In my young mind, I didn't think Nixon had a chance to win. I thought,
of course not.
Yeah, who's for Nixon?
Like Pauline Kael in her famous New Yorker piece. This election must be wrong. I don't know anyone who voted for Nixon.
Exactly.
But there's that beginning of that mindset.
Well, but I think it was manifest again, wasn't it, in 2016, because the same disconnect was there.
Yes.
The auto bailout didn't save Ohio for Hillary or Michigan. I mean, so, you know, you could go out and trumpet some of Obama's benchmark achievements, and it wasn't enough to save her. Where you think it should have, right? If you're a Democratic strategy.
Well, I mean, yes. Well, only if you live in your own bubble. Only if you live in your own narrative and refuse, as so many people in politics to do, to say, oh, the people must, and not say the people should think the way I think, but what are they thinking? I mean, at the bottom of so much of this is a contempt and among the political classes, the elites, a contempt for the American people. And the one thing I learned, even when the American people were disappointing me and breaking my heart sometimes on their decisions, that in the aggregate, the American people had a rationale for what they did, and they were trying to do what they believed the right thing. And that they, the vast aggregate common sense of this country, it should be viewed in awe, and not as something to be not even acknowledged.
Yeah, because the elite take on the election is that the Russians did it, and James Comey did it, and you know, had the election been held 11 days, Hillary just said if the election were on October 27th, I would have won. So,
By the way, let me just say, first of all, that the first one point I want to make right away. This is why we're supposed to have elections. This is why I think early voting has been a catastrophe. Look, I'm all in favor of having a full day of voting, a weekend, whatever you want to do. But elections are processes that culminate and should culminate in a final day. Trump was elected because, and what worried me as I wrote on the Monday morning before the election is, what we don't know is there are millions of votes that have already been counted, taken, have already been banked, if you will, particularly by the Democrats, who are far better organized. And the question is, would that be enough? A lot of people were changing their minds or in flux until the very end.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 11 days before the campaign, she might have won. She probably thought that, I noticed she didn't think that the Access Hollywood leak of what was NBC's proprietary material, which NBC refused to distribute, somehow ended up in the Washington Post on a morning, because, you know, that was that kind of leaking, that kind of stuff. See, that works for their view.
Right.
So she was saying, oh, yes, they had orchestrated that.
Yeah.
The problem is, but let me just say about the Russian. This is fundamentally a belief that the American people have such contempt, that the American people are so stupid that they could be influenced by some ham-handed whatever, Facebook bots, whatever, by the Russians or something.
Fake news.
When in fact Hillary Clinton, fake news, when in fact Hillary Clinton had spent almost $1 billion of advertising, had all of these advantages, had the entire national, for all intents and purposes, 90% of the mainstream media as advocates for her, and the American people were somehow influenced by something because people were running around on Facebook and fake news or something being done. No, the American people from the very beginning had problems with her. And the Comey situation was the American people from before July, but from July on, had a very clear view, including many Clinton voters, that she had escaped indictment because she was powerful, that the law worked in two different, something like almost, I would say almost seven, almost three quarters of Americans believe that the system worked one way for ordinary people and that in a different way for the voters who are powerful, and that it was a result of her influence that she did, and a majority, well up 60%, believe she should have been indicted. You know, that view had not changed. Her line from the beginning of the process, from the UN thing, all the way through, all the stuff, and the FBI's performance, which is to say uneven, is to be generous, given the way that his deputy, Mr. Comey, appointed, was his wife was almost $1 million recipient of funds from the Clintons' closest political ally and fundraiser, Terry McAuliffe, Governor McAuliffe of Virginia, and that the foundation, which I always believed was a far more serious legal issue, which was buried in investigation. All these things, the deals done with all the people for immunity and for destroying the evidence and whatever, and cleaning as her lawyers, the FBI admitted her lawyers, all of that stuff would never have been allowed if it had been an ordinary citizen. And so, you know, the fact is the American people are not that easily, 300 million people are not that easily stampeded. And the problem for the Democratic Party is that it cannot understand how they can, so they must find some excuse. It is a pathology you have there. And by the way, it's not much different from the Chamber of Commerce Republican Party, which operates basically a Republican Party, but and you can support Donald Trump. Someday I hope he learns, his eyes awaken, to what his allies are doing to him, which is they are trying to promote their view of the world, which the Republican electorate wiped out in the 2016 primary.
Yeah, they sure did. And I'm going to ask you about health care, and I'm going to ask you some other things about going forward. Also, a confession I have after 33 years from college with Roger Mudd. But stay tuned. Pat Caddell, a legend in this business and speaks truth to power, unlike others. Coming back on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Two Bridges was one of the toughest neighborhoods in New York, especially in the Al Smith projects. It was a no man's land with no rules. On Christmas Eve 1951, Mac Pastamadeo vanished without a trace while walking home with his little boy Angelo. Now 13, Angelo is a gang member and the only witness to the brutal murder of an undercover cop who holds a clue to Mac's disappearance 6 years ago. Stalked by killers, Angelo becomes part of an unlikely alliance of a priest, a mob boss, and a police detective in order to uncover the truth behind the murder and Mac's disappearance. Weepers by Nick Chiarkis.
At Troy Research, we understand that success is determined by your customers. To realize the greatest success possible, you need to understand what they want and why. Your customers have opinions to share with you. As researchers, our assignment is to gather those opinions, illuminate the issues, and shed the light of understanding on decision-making. Where can good research take your business? Call or email to talk about it. Troy Research at 608-271-8884 or email jlittle@troyresearch.com. This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
In real estate, you want to work with Tim Rayl.
Tim Rayl knew everything about the area. He knew the schools. He knew what the market was doing and what it trended as far as exactly where we should go in as far as the price to put an offer on and what we should ask for our old house.
Let's get ink on paper today with Realtor Tim Rayl of Coldwell Banker Success, 698-7653.
I would definitely recommend Tim Rayl to anyone that was buying or selling a house. We had a great experience, and I think they would too.
Tim Rail, 698-7653.
Hi, I'm Mitch. I like to go on long walks to the Arboretum on a Sunday holding hands. I like to talk about relationships. I'm a gourmet cook. I like poetry. I like to go rock climbing on the weekends with my non-drinking friends.
My name's Mitch Hank. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're right on.
Need a comedian or MC for your private party or corporate event? Don't be shy. I can do it without telling any dirty jokes. In fact, when I'm not doing my Frank Sinatra tribute show, I've done stand-up at the comedy club and at private events for years. Whether it's a large convention or private gathering in your living room, I've done it. We all need to laugh more. The world can be even more stressful than it is. There's no business like show business, and I usually find those of you who have the best jokes about your coworkers at the company dinner. So feel free to contact me at 347-0374. That's 347-0374. Email at info@madisontalks.com. That's info@madisontalks.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hank Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to The Mitch Hank Show.
Our guest is highly respected pollster and political analyst, Pat Caddell. And I have to do my confession now. It's just starting to bother me. But 33 years ago in the dorm room at Butler, I was so angry at Super Tuesday coverage of the Hart Mondale race that I called NBC News as Pat Caddell and left a message for Roger Mudd. And he called my dorm mate.
Oh, my God.
The next day, and I spent 10 minutes in front of 10 people ripping Roger Mudd and NBC News' coverage as Pat Caddell. I have to confess.
Oh, no.
33
oh, my
years
God.
Later. And so that day, he did a pro-Hart piece on the nightly that night, and we all just jumped up and we were excited. And I have to confess that after 33 years. But I did spend 10 minutes with Roger Mudd, and I thank you for
well,
that.
Well, that is a great moment. That's great to know, because, in fact, The Tuesday night coverage was, that Super Tuesday was just so awful. It was unbelievable. And Mondale had lost.
Well, I'm glad.
7 of 8 major. And then they were saying he had survived and whatever. And it was, anyway, but there are a lot more to that. But that's the whole
yes. Well, I was wondering for all those years if you would have run into Roger Mudd after that, if he would have brought
that
up.
Oh, I had never had the occasion after, but I wish I had known that, or he had. It would have been an interesting moment.
Been a funny moment. Just so you know, I just ripped him a new one, you know, on the thing. And because if I recall, in the interview he did with Hart, he asked Hart about his impression of Teddy Kennedy. And Gary said, "Mr. Mudd, please," you know, because he was a little bit awkward of those types of light moments.
Yeah.
But it was a fun time, but, you know, we could all talk about that campaign for 3 hours. That damn Ray Strother ad in Illinois. Anyway. But health care, how's this going to play out? Because now we have the media saying they're going to dock people, millions of people, off their coverage. And I saw some Republicans on this morning saying, no, we've got the high-risk pools, and it's a small amount of people who will be needing that, because most people are in group health through work or through Medicaid or through Medicare or VA. So they're trying to counterpunch. But the narrative for the media is that they're going to knock out, you know, 25 million people. How's it going to play out?
Well, first of all, let me just say, part of this, a lot of this is Donald Trump and the White House and the Republicans' own fault. But they could have had this many years without having a replacement plan, having campaigned on it, and then doing what they did as they did in the on the appropriations supplemental, which was basically as they did after winning in 2014, both houses are going back room and selling out to Obama and the Democrats everything that they had just campaigned on. But in any event, they had no plan. Also, they lost control of the narrative that the White House should understand, and they have the worst operation, outside operation imaginable, given the attack that the president is daily under, the war going on against him, particularly in the media. The media has a narrative of it. You would think that Obamacare was doing great. Yesterday, Iowa's last insurer said that they were considering pulling out of Iowa. Aetna's pulling out of Virginia. I mean, this for people who are in the individual market, It is a catastrophe what is happening. Obamacare was one tissue set of lies after another. However, once you start giving people things, whatever, and it's easy to stir people up about not wanting to lose them or fear of what the unknown is. That's because you don't condition us. We've had no hearings. There's been no discussion. They're trying to vote a bill that no one has even seen. I blame the Republicans as much as the Democrats. But the truth of the matter is there has been no real discussion of just how badly this is. And from the beginning, remember one thing, and I said it the night it passed or was jammed through on an only party vote basis. I said it on Fox News. This is a crime against democracy, and it will not stand. And it has ravaged the Democratic Party, who now act like, oh, this is the most wonderful thing ever. You know what? I am tired of their narrative. I'm tired of the fact, I'm sure the American people are, that someone cannot explain to them the all sides of this issue and the rounding about it, because we do have a health care problem. You do not want people who are in precondition, on the one hand, to be destroyed because they get an illness. On the other hand, the idea that you should not have to have insurance, that there should be no penalty, you decide not to have insurance, so you suddenly discover you're sick, is insane model of health care. And all of this could be cured, as I talked to one gentleman who is very smart and political officer, said, the government should have had large risk pools to begin with on this stuff. We didn't have to have these kinds of problems. But first of all, remember one thing, and I think most of your viewers, because I think most of the country believes it. In the end, both of these parties are interested in one thing, advancing their political interest over the interest of the country or what is good for America or the American people themselves. And they are not so stupid as not to be able to read that in a sense. So my view on the health care, this will go on for months and months. The administration has lost control, much as we did with Jimmy Carter. It would be very wise for the Trump people. Human nature is that we always think we are that there is no history. When I was young, I was not as impressed with experience in history as I have gotten much older. But you know what? The last outsider administration with Jimmy Carter, when we came into power, we made a lot of mistakes, of which because there was an unhappiness with the outsider winning after Watergate and Jimmy Carter run against Washington. We made a lot of mistakes, but the Trump administration's White House seems to be very happy in reinventing them all over on their own, rather than taking a second to learn something. They could avoid a lot of heartache if that were the case. And one of the things you have to learn is the president's allies are not necessarily his allies. My God, the establishment Republican Party, owned by the Chamber of Commerce, is not a hell of a lot of difference in its feelings about Trump than is the Democratic Party owned by George Soros and others. And the media companies, Comcast. I mean, I don't even, and others. So that is a problem. And, but we see these locked-in narratives. We saw it yesterday with Comey's testimony. A bizarre set of circumstances, which we don't need to rehash other than to say, oh, my gosh. As I said, people believe they would have known if they had done what Hillary Clinton had done, they would have been buried so far underneath the prison, they would never be heard from again. But, he gets up there and says, they found thousands of new emails at the end after they exonerated. But we still don't know what those emails are. There is a series here. But let me just say how Washington works. An example of this is best illustrated from day before yesterday. I sat up that night and watched the entire airline hearings on customer satisfaction, only because as a frequent flyer, I hate the airline, with an unabashed anger. The major culprit, Delta Airlines, wasn't even there. Then we had all these corporate types, and you have to separate the Southwest, the Alaska Airlines, and the JetBlues from the big air, the big four. Well, Southwest is now a big four. But United, American, and Delta, which have all gone through these combinations to destroy competition, this is the full circle from deregulation 78 to no regulation now.
And they're talking about, well, what they do, and so they were asked during the thing about the squeezing of people into seats, which I believe is not only a safety danger, but is in fact a health danger to passengers, particularly those of any size whatsoever other than midget in these seats. And you know what? Then yesterday it comes out that American Airlines, who had one of those spokesmen, those well-trained liars that woman was, using all the euphemisms they use in front of Congress people who, by the way, all had terrible experiences, but were very careful because they always worry about where their money comes from, let them off the hook. How Delta could not be subpoenaed to be there is beyond me, given what they were doing a couple of weeks ago, which is on the front page of the Wall Street Journal this morning. But the fact is they got into late in the thing about seats, my favorite topic, because I am tired of being squeezed like a lemon into something. I mean, like it was a boxcar. So but the final thing was that what they did with the that they now squeezed seats even more yesterday. They announced they did, American did. So what do you got? I mean, they would do that the day after they testified.
Oh, well, I mean, the fix is in, but that's all PR mumbo
jumbo. The fix is always in right now. And that's why the revolution of the American people to reclaim their country is going on, not stopping.
I wouldn't think so. It's great to talk to you. We could talk for hours. I will confess one more thing. I got through to Hunter Thompson's room at the Cathedral Hill Hotel, as Pat Goodell once, too. So I did. That's it. My confession is complete. But anyway.
There you are.
Thank you so much.
Hang out with Hunter a great deal. Thank you.
Yeah, and I appreciate it very much, sir. It was an honor, and we'll hopefully talk to you again at some point. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Thanks. How about that? Scott Rippey will hopefully answer your questions. Joanne, I'm sorry time was short. We'll come back and answer your healthcare question. To me, healthcare is big. I mean, you know, it affects you. Important stuff coming back on the Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
Joe here from Comedy on State. Hey, looking for something different to do with your friends? You got friends in town, maybe you're celebrating something. Comedy on State is known to be one of the top three comedy clubs in the country. We handle it right because of the details. If you want to experience that yourself, MadisonComedy.com. I can't say that enough. You can get links to our text club where you can get free tickets.
For a list of upcoming comedy club performers or to purchase tickets, go to MadisonComedyClub.com and click shows. Performer bios are available by clicking on their pictures.
That's Comedy on State, MadisonComedy.com or 256-0099.
The great Joe DiMaggio still holds the major league record for the longest hitting streak at 56 games. Bucks Takeout Pizza has a 56-year winning streak for the best thin crust pizza in the city. Bucks Pizza has a unique taste like no other. Handmade pizzas with homemade sauce and homemade sausage. Two Madison locations on University Avenue and Cottage Grove Road. Just go to BucksPizzaMadison.com. BucksPizzaMadison.com.
Talk radio will never be the same. The uncommon sense of Mitch Hank has been unleashed worldwide. This is the all-new Mitch Hank Show.
If you're running a B2B business, there's a brand new 3-minute video that can change your company and change your life at needmoreme.com. If you're a B2B business owner, boss, or manager struggling to find more time to sell while still running the rest of your business, the new science of virtual relationship building can grow sales for you and as you. If your business has larger relationship-based sales with a long selling cycle and you need help driving more revenue, learn about the future of B2B sales in 3 minutes at needmoreme.com. That's needmoreme.com.
6AM Marketing is a Wisconsin-based ad agency that doesn't look or act like other ad agencies. They don't follow conventional thinking and constantly push themselves and their clients to test the bounds of how far they can go. The result is relationships that have lasted more than 10 years. Clients refer to 6AM and their work as fresh, insightful, strategic, edgy, and creative. 6AM shows customers why your products and services are better than the competition. 6AM's brand smart process helps you establish your brand in the market for years to come. With a client's marketing team by its side, 6AM digs for the business problem the client is trying to solve and the business goals and objectives they hope to achieve, examining the market, competitors, the brand's consumers, and messaging to define a brand proposition that is both compelling and unique to the market. 6AM Marketing. They do it differently, and they do it well. Go to 6ammarketing.com. That's www.6ammarketing.com.
Welcome to the Mitch Hank Show, originating four blocks from Wisconsin's capital. Mitch is the radio voice of uncommon sense. All sides of an argument are welcome here. Just be prepared to make one, as Mitch argues for truth, not victory. Politics, lifestyle, pop culture are all on the table. So get ready to participate on the Mitch Hank Show.
Well, you go from Pat Goodell to Scott Rippey, only heavyweights on this show. As we talk about healthcare, which is a big story, Scott Rippey of Rippey Keen Marketing, very knowledgeable about healthcare for years, having studied it with the clients who are involved in that industry and so forth. Hello, Scott.
How's it going, Mitch?
It's going fine, and we now have the House apparently gathering the votes to pass its own version of healthcare reform. And one of the keys I'm hearing this bandied about, House Republicans are pushing back against the narrative that they're $130 billion short on the high-risk pools for people with pre-existing conditions, saying that, well, no, most of those people have group health through work or Medicaid or Medicare or VA or whatever, and so you're talking about a smaller universe, and so, yeah, there's enough money. Now, that's what I've been hearing this morning, and to that, you would say what?
I would say they're actually $192 billion short. Not $130 billion short.
Well, of course,
the narrative that those people are coverable under group health plans is a complete misnomer. When Wisconsin had its high risk pool prior to Obamacare, you're talking about tens of thousands of people who would have no other means to get health insurance other than that high risk pool.
But aren't you supposed to take people with pre-existing conditions? Say, if I get a job for a company, I expect to be covered. And that's what they're arguing in their pushback, that you already have it through work, or you should get it again through work, or that kind of thing.
Well, then why do we need the high-risk pools?
The high-risk pools, they're saying, is for the individual market. They're making the case, Scott, that the people in group health aren't part of the equation, that this only deals with the sliver of people who are in the individual market, which is a smaller universe of people.
Yeah, that's just simply not the case.
Okay,
it never was the case when, pre-Obamacare, when high-risk pools were heavily populated throughout the country. It's not the case now. And with the sort of the waivers and exemptions that they put into this bill last night that are going to allow states to apply for waivers eliminating the 10 essential health benefits, now you're talking about 159 million people in the group insurance market whose benefits are sort of at risk as a result of that. So there are a whole bunch of different problems, I guess you could say.
You could.
Both the group and the individual market here.
But what do we do, though, about the fact that we read Aetna's pulling out of another state, and we have five states with one insurance carrier, and Iowa soon to have zero in the individual market? In other words, you have these doomsday stories in the news of these major carriers pulling out by the week, and yet, so in other words, there's another narrative that says that Obamacare, as it is currently structured, is going south. But do you just refute that, or is everything hunky-dory?
Two things here. Number one, nothing about this new bill is going to change the individual marketplace and insurers' desire to be part of it. Nothing about this bill is going to do that. Second thing is, and Paul Ryan is well aware of this, even if this bill is ultimately dead on arrival, and I think we can be about 99% sure that the Senate is going to rip it to shreds, even if this bill is ultimately dead on arrival, all of this is occurring at the exact same time that health insurers are preparing their 2018 plans and rates. Those are due to the states and the feds next month. So automatically, just by virtue of the timing of this and this cloud of uncertainty that's hanging over insurance carriers across the country, next year's market will already be destabilized simply by sheer virtue of the timing.
So, go ahead. My point is, so then it sounds like the one argument on the progressive side of the debate would be that the only answer is single payer because none of this insurance stuff's going to work. But then you'll never get that from the Republican-controlled Congress. So where does that leave us at the end of the day?
I don't know if a single payer is the only answer. There are some very obvious fixes and tweaks to the Affordable Care Act that could strengthen the individual market, protect the group market. But you know, the GOP-held Congress is also not interested they're not interested in making Obamacare any better. I think we all know that, right? So instead, what we have here, you know, let's be clear about what this bill is. This is an $883 billion tax cut for people in the highest income brackets. How do they cut $883 billion in taxes? An $880 billion cut to Medicaid. It's really, Mitch, it's sort of unashamed reverse Robin Hood politics. That's really what this bill is.
Which the Senate, which we both know, the Senate would never go for that with Murkowski and Portman and Collins. It would just never happen. I mean, it's not going to happen.
That's the assumption. But Paul Ryan will still be able to claim his hollow victory if he gets, you know, narrow passage, which, you know, looks like maybe he'll pass this thing by 4 or 6 votes this afternoon.
Yeah. Which is amazing to me. Now, is there rationalization on the Medicaid funding that they're going to give it to the states and the states can figure out how to do that? Is that the narrative that we're getting from the GOP House bill?
Yeah, the narrative is that the current funding mechanism would be replaced by block grants to the states.
No.
Which on day one is going to be fine. But block grants don't adjust for changes in healthcare costs. They adjust for changes in enrollment in the program.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what happens is over time, this large gap starts to open up between supply and demand. On a funding standpoint,
I have this grisly image of the large gap now. But the Freedom Caucus, so they come in states where their districts are safe, and the Mark Meadows and the other Republicans in the caucus, they will say, hey, we've got this $20 trillion debt, we have $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities, we can't just do unlimited Medicaid spending. To that, what do you tell them?
Well, then do we really need to give an $883 billion tax cut to rich people? I mean, if that's our concern, right? If debt and deficit is the concern, that sort of doesn't hold water with this bill.
Well, that's all about the debate on whether it's pro-growth or not, which it doesn't sound like you're in that Arthur Laffer camp.
I'm sort of not in the trickle-down camp, no.
No, you're not in that camp. So for them, it's all about growth. And if you have growth, you have more revenue. I mean, that's the center of that debate.
Right.
But the attack is that it's just a tax cut for the rich. The rich will say, no, it's a pro-growth mechanism. That's where that falls. Which, of course, the only time they can do it is when they have both chambers plus the White House. You can count the receipts in 2 years and see who's right on that. Fair enough.
Oh, I'll be watching. Don't worry.
Well, and you're healthier and thinner, so you'll be watching for sure. But no, it just sounds to me, and Scott Ripper, you know a lot about this, that the Senate will probably not do that in terms of the Medicaid money. They'll have more in there. They may subsidize the pools to a greater extent, and then they go to the conference committee and hack something out. What can they do something going forward that could make a workable compromise in your mind?
Yeah, you know, nobody in the Senate so far has sort of come forward and said, if this bill in its current form gets to our chamber, here's what I want to do to it. So there are a lot of unknowns here. It'll start in committee in the Senate and then go to to the full chamber, it's very likely that the Senate will offer its version of the bill. It'll go back to the House, and somebody's not going to be happy. Either the moderates are not going to be happy, the moderate Republicans, or the House Freedom Caucus is not going to be happy. Because it's unlikely that the Senate can do something that's going to please both of those groups in the House. You know, and even if they do get something, you know, remember that much of this bill, what it ultimately does, and the way that sort of the House of Representatives sort of keeps its hands clean on this, is it punts so much of this to the states, to ultimately where, you know, if some of the problems in the system occur that are predicted to occur with a bill like this, they become the governor's faults.
No, I understand.
Because it's going to be the governors who are going to be applying.
But if I'm going
exemption that starts to destabilize the market.
But if you're talking to a moderate and saying, okay, you don't like the Medicaid reductions, and you don't like the elimination of the basic essential coverage, the 10 essential things, then if you say to that person, okay, what would you do to lower premiums? What would that moderate say?
Because, well, you know, I don't know what that person would say. You know, you and I have talked about this before. The only way to lower premiums is to lower the cost of care. And that takes something that Republicans despise, and that's called regulation.
So you can't charge $1,000 for a tonsil check or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Charge $300 for a stool in your visit, you know.
So, you know, you have to, that's the driver of insurance premiums, right?
Right, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, we have to sort of address this in reverse fashion. You know, we have to start with the cost of care before we can really address
But they do that because people don't have insurance or people don't have, so when they provide care for somebody who's not covered, they pass it on to us, right, by these jerry-rigged sticker shock charges for sitting on a stool. I mean, isn't that what happens? You know,
I think that's a little oversimplified. I think that, you know,
Go ahead.
I think that the charges, you know, some of the outrageous charges for, you know, what are some relatively simple medical procedures, we cannot put that on the backs of sort of uninsured people who are getting care. You know, it's part of the reason why the number one goal of the Affordable Care Act was to simply reduce the number of people who were uninsured. So that then over a period of time could also start to impact premiums in a positive way because people weren't obtaining care in that fashion.
Well, what if you have a bronze plan or whatever plan you have under Obamacare and your deductible is $10,000, your money in the bank is $125,000. I mean, you're a little bit shy of actual health care access, aren't you? I mean, because you can't.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody who buys a bronze plan, you know, the cap on deductibles is, I believe, $67.50 per person right now. So you couldn't get a $10,000 deductible if you were a single person. But you know, people should shop and purchase their health insurance plans with that in mind.
Well, at least you're going to get coverage up to that point. And then after that, what is it, 80-20 after that usually? Or 90-10?
Yeah, so if something really catastrophic happens to you health-wise, you know, you're going to be covered beyond that deductible. But it's, you know, we have a problem too, I think, in this country with sort of insurance illiteracy. That, you know, a lot of people don't understand what they're buying. A lot of people don't know what a copay or a deductible is or how it's going to impact them. They simply sort of say, okay, well, I've got health insurance.
I've got insurance. I just wanted to cover everything. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And then older people buy
a lot of different.
And then older people buy cheap plans, thinking that and of course the cheap plans are cheap for a reason, right? Supplements or whatever the case may be, and then they go into
you sort of get what you pay for there.
Long term care, and oh my God, I owe $20,000. I've been here for 3 weeks, you know, whatever the case. Scott Rippey, it's always great. I'm sure we'll talk again, and you've got it going on there with knowing how things are going. We'll keep posted and watching this closely. Thank you, Rippey Keene, Scott Rippey. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Mitch.
All right, take care. Come back with a few final thoughts here on the whole picture. And the chief, I'd go to see the chief of police get his money. That was good to see. And we'll come back. Final thoughts and your thoughts, too, on MadisonTalks.com.
This is Pete Gunderson. Pre-planning a life celebration doesn't necessarily mean prepaying. At Gunderson Funeral and Cremation Care, we offer a variety of affordable options that you can pre-arrange for free. It's pre-planning without the worry of prepaying. Learn more at GundersonFH.com, your hometown life celebration center.
Gunderson
If you operate a business, you know there is no one-size-fits-all solution for today's technology challenges. MadisonGeeks.com plans, services, and installs technologies for small and medium businesses like network systems, servers, firewalls, wireless access points, telecommunications, security, remote service options, and business productivity solutions. MadisonGeeks.com is your IT staff. They take time to sit down to discuss your needs and present cost-effective solutions. With a Better Business Bureau A-plus rating, they are your trusted IT outsource partner. Expect less downtime. Faster resolutions lead to more productivity. Fewer day-to-day issues. Their proactive maintenance helps prevent issues from occurring. MadisonGeeks.com also offers computer and laptop service and repair. Madison Geeks are there to help. They're known for their candid, friendly approach and reliable, ready response. Check them out online at MadisonGeeks.com.
The all-new Mitch Hanks Show would like to thank our sponsors. We're grateful for their support of the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
When it comes to telephone on-hold advertising, some commonly asked questions are, why do we need an on-hold message? How do we write a script? How long should the message be? How does the message get played? How much does it cost? I'm Bob of Abella Creative Services, and a telephone on-hold message speaks directly to your target audience while they're on hold with your company. Continuously advertises only your business without the clutter of competitive ads and for just a fraction of conventional advertising costs. At Bob Abella Creative Services, we'll help you draft a well-written script, provide the appropriate announcer, music, or sound effects, and the studio time and expertise to put it all together. We'll also provide you with any special equipment you might need to play your on-hold message. Even though we probably have more experience than most other on-hold message companies, we'll cost you less. Let Bob Abella Creative Services stretch your advertising dollar with an on-hold message that provides your customers with real, actionable solutions to their problems. Bob Abella Creative Services gets results. Just send us an email at bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. That's bacsgetsresults@gmail.com. Mitch Hank for Atterbury, Cameron, Hague.
I'm proud to be sitting next to senior partner and a man who's been voted Wisconsin's super lawyer multiple times, Eric Hague. How often do you take a case all the way to a jury trial?
What we do that's different from some firms is, when necessary, we take the case to trial. It's the ability to do that and a track record of doing that that gives you the leverage to get a fair settlement for the vast majority of your clients. There are lawyers out there who actually will not take them to trial. And it doesn't take the insurance industry, of course, very long to figure that out. So their leverage is minimal when trying to negotiate a settlement on the case. Whereas the lawyers at Atterbury, Cameron, Hague have all demonstrated an ability to take cases to trial. It's that track record that provides the leverage to get a fair settlement so that we don't have to take the cases to trial.
So when you need a lawyer, do what I did. Call Atterbury, Cameron, Hague and reach them at yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com. That's yourwisconsininjurylawyers.com.
Welcome back to the Mitch Hanks Show. Mitch seeks the truth by inviting all sides of the issue. Thanks for listening to the Mitch Hanks Show.
I'm just noticing a letter to the editor in the State Journal. Yitzhak Perlman was here for a show, The Overture. This guy writes a scathing editorial that people were rude and taking pictures on their phones were going off, and people were talking and shouting out requests. He was appalled and said, Perlman handled the distraction with grace. It is a shame that a few people were an unnecessary annoyance during this fabulous concert. I expect more from Madison audiences. And, of course, I second that. I'm not Yitzhak Perlman, but I do, you know, two-bit stand-up and sing Sinatra. But I've noticed young people under 30 don't know what an intermission is. They'll get up and go smoke during the show. Or they'll talk. The under-30 crowd will talk during the show, which you don't do, right? So you have to go to the table and bust them. It's like, when'd you learn to whisper in a helicopter? Actually, I said that at George's table once at Picasso's. Oh, George.
Oh, Mitch, hey, I was really good with that Gooden guy, Paul.
Which one? Pat Cadell?
Yeah, Pat Cadell, yeah.
Yeah.
But I missed the part where you told him, you admitted about being him to Roger Mudd.
Yeah, yeah, he liked that. He actually liked hearing that. Yeah, yeah, he did. I thought he might be mad.
Well, he should be flattered. I mean, that's flattering. That some
well, and I did, finally, I also confess that I used his name to get through to Hunter Thompson's hotel room on the phone at the Cathedral Hill Hotel.
Yeah, I heard that one, but I missed the main
but
one.
But Hunter wasn't there.
Hey, Mitch,
yeah.
Did you see Purdue on the Today Show this morning? They said Purdue has got a Trump, how to protest Trump class now.
Really? Okay, wow, boy.
Oh, that's well, funny.
Yeah.
But your mama liked that.
Well, my
right?
mother would have liked that, but she didn't like Purdue, so.
Right. I know, that's what I was saying.
She didn't like Lincoln because he approved the land grant for Purdue, yeah.
I know.
That goes pretty deep, by the way. You know, Wisconsin does not have a rivalry like that. At Purdue, Indiana, there's real hatred. My mother truly hated Purdue, although she got her master's from Purdue for teaching, but she...
Well, that's Iowa State. You know,
well,
Wisconsin fans think it's yeah, Iowa, but
we,
it's
we
not.
Don't, we
it's
don't
Iowa
have...
State.
Wisconsin does not have a rivalry. You know, you can talk about Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
No. Well, thank you so much, George, but, you know, again...
Yeah, that was real good, yeah.
But I think it's appalling that people are rude and loud during Itzhak Perlman, don't you think? I mean, come on. Have some decency.
Especially
a
show like that. I mean, this isn't Van Halen.
Keep your mouth shut, and it says turn the phones down. How about turn the phones off?
Yeah, what are they doing?
Perlman.
I know...
And why is it that when a cell phone goes off at a theater or anywhere like that, it takes the person forever... It just rings and rings. Have you seen that?
That is weird, isn't it?
At a recital?
If I make a mistake, I rarely leave the phone
on.
No,
but they can't find the phone.
But if it does, I'm there. I'm
on
one ring.
Go turn the phone off.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I want to go do it with the person and just go turn their phone off for them.
Smash it.
Final thoughts here on The Mitch Hanks Show on MadisonTalks.com.
This is the all-new Mitch Hanks Show.
MadisonTalks.com is the home of Madison's most creative talk radio. If you have a serious gift of gab, you have stories to share, political, social, or religious positions to express, contact Madison Talks to have your own 60-minute weekly podcast recorded and posted for the world to hear. Have a new book to promote? Madison Talks is the ideal place to promote it. Fly solo or line up guests for your weekly live talk session. When your 60-minute program is finished live streaming, it'll be posted as a podcast to MadisonTalks.com for listening 24/7. Take your message to the world with MadisonTalks.com. Call 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. That's 608-210-1667 or visit MadisonTalks.com. MadisonTalks.com, looking for your creative commentary.
You're listening to The Mitch Hanks Show. Once again, here's the voice of uncommon sense, Mitch Hanks.
I would just say this about healthcare. Just, you know, lose weight like I'm about to do. Eat apples and oranges. You know, on this diet I'm about to do, you're not supposed to have bananas. Not supposed to have even broccoli and cauliflower in the reduction phase. Although, I can do it. You won't lose weight as fast because those are a little starchy. Carrots. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can have spinach and green beans and onions and tomatoes are all okay.
Kale?
And maybe kale's be. I've never had kale in my life. Kale. I've never had kale. I see kale. But kale. My wife's name was Gail, but I've not had kale. You can't have the starch. Starch and sugar are out. You got a salad. You have red wine vinegar. You can have apple cider vinegar. You can have balsamic. You can't have vinaigrette because vinaigrette has oil. So you tell the server, I can't have vinaigrette. they'll bring it. They'll just, they don't know what you're talking about. I mean, just things happen too fast. Well, eating
like
out is tough.
Straight like balsamic vinegar.
Yeah, right? You can have.
Okay.
But usually have to ask for it or bring it. You know, just eating out on the diet is tough. And croutons are out. You can have a salad with cucumbers, tomatoes, onions, you know, and pepper and whatever, but no salt, I guess. But it's you know, that's what it is. But you lose weight pretty fast. I did it 8 years ago. I was 80 pounds, but I gained 90 back. But this time I wanted to do it and keep it off. We thank Bob Keller for the spacer in West Wash. He's a great guy. And he's got space for you to check out. Tuscan Place, Washington Court, Westside Seniors, Whitcomb Square, all this in Orchard Ridge. Just go to KellerApartments.com. That's KellerApartments.com. Brian Beebe, I will open my eyes and smile. I'm just focusing on my guest. Brian Messmer, we thank you for the engineering work you put forth today. Bob Abella with Wide World of Radio, classic radio from the 30s and 40s, coming up next. Roundtable tomorrow, Tom Smith and Mikey Michelson will be real good. See you then on the Mitch Hanks Show, MadisonTalks.com.
Hello and welcome to Wide World of Radio. I'm Bob Abella and I'll be your host for the next hour as we saddle up and ride west with Hopalong Cassidy and the Cisco Kid.
Cisco.
Hey, Pancho.
Pancho lived in Wilton one time.
You did? When was that?
When Pancho was twins.
You were twins?
Si. To be twins, Pancho got to be two, no?
Si, Chico. Twins means two.
Si. Then Pancho got the proof. Pancho got the picture taken in Wilton when Pancho was two.
Oh, Pancho!
Oh, Jesus.
The American Radio Society presents Wide World of Radio, an hour of family entertainment at its best. Once again, we review some of radio's fondest memories with your host, Bob Abella.
Our two programs today, Hopalong Cassidy and the Cisco Kid, made their radio debuts in the 1940s. The Cisco Kid was first heard over the Mutual Network in 1943, and like most Western heroes, Cisco had a sidekick, Pancho. For a time, the Cisco Kid was played by Jack Mather, with the talented Mel Blanc as Pancho. Together, they toured the Old West, aiding the forces of law and order, helping to bring many criminals to justice, and many times being mistaken for the bandits themselves. Cisco and Pancho were Mexican-American, had a relationship marked with good humor, and their adventures always